No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All righty. Welcome back to another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday. We have a lot of basketball today. We have one Badger game and a handful of Bucks games and some other things to talk about with the Milwaukee Bucks. But we are going to start this week like we normally do with the Badgers. So we have Mike back with us. So we're going to get the intro going and then we're going to talk basketball.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatic Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Alrighty, so the Wisconsin Badgers basketball team had a singular road game this week, just the one game, and they went to Iowa and completed their season sweep, so they beat Iowa at home, and they beat Iowa on the road now. So we'll let Mike go first, and he can talk about the guards, and then we will switch to the wings and the bigs. So, Mike, go ahead and kick us off.
All right. Yeah, another big-time win. You know, going into this, conventional wisdom for any typical Badger fan would indicate that this was going to be very high scoring going into it. That was not the case. You definitely would have thought of it too. I mean, Iowa just came off of scoring 81 against Purdue the game before. I'm playing against Purdue. Purdue's obviously a top dog, but obviously a different day. But anyway, going to this game, I thought Max Klesman, I'm going to call up first. I thought this is another game in which he found other ways to help his team win, right? So 9 points, including 2 of 6 from three. He had a very nice three-pointer in transition right at the beginning of the game to get us going. He had 2 rebounds, 2 assists. I would think the most encouraging part of this whole game, though, he had the opportunity and the privilege of guarding Peyton Sanford, who is one of Iowa's best scorers. He held Peyton Sanford to 2 of 11 shooting in this game, which was pretty great on his part because he had the task of doing that. Peyton Sanford has a very quick release, both in transition and coming off a screen. So trying to defend that the whole time, that is pretty damn difficult. And this is also going to go off the first time we played Iowa. So Peyton Klesman did hold Peyton Sanford and the other guys did too, to 3 of 20 shooting overall versus Wisconsin. So being one of the better guards on this team, that's very, very impressive, I think, overall. So, and then Klesman, as well as, other guys on the roster too, they held one of their other leading scorers, Josh Dix, scoreless in the last 8:51 of this game. And when Owen Freeman, who is out for this game against us, is out, I mean, Josh Dix, Peyton Sanford, those are your two main guys. So they kind of put the clamps on him in this game, which was very encouraging to see. And yeah, and then we got Kamari McGee, pretty typical day for him. I would say he did get 20 plus minutes, 5 points, had a big time corner three in that second half that put us up, I think, by 2, I want to say. He also had 2 rebounds, 2 assists and 1 steal. And then we also got some good Jack Janicki play. He only got 4 minutes, but he also hit a big, big clutch three for us, right when it was a close game right in the second half there. So I think the biggest encouraging thing of this game overall, the Badgers can win in multiple ways. We've seen that now versus Iowa and now, Indiana. If you want, it's kind of like a back-to-back, playing more defensive basketball, which kind of is going along the lines of our history at Wisconsin, right? More fans are accustomed to that, but we've been showing that the last two games here. So that's been very encouraging to see. I think another big part was we cut down the turnovers in the second half of this game. If we're talking from, I said in the group chat, cut down the turnovers, we win this game. I think it was, we had six in the first half, and I think we had nine total for the game. So that was good to see. And just going to quickly rattle off the Johns closing the game. Tanjay, the closer, just getting to the free throw line. And I'll let you guys go into it more, obviously. But I think John Tanjay's ability just to get to the free throw line after, and especially in the second half, obviously, after going the first half with hardly getting to the line as a team in general, just having that reliable closer ultimately between John Blackwell and John Tanjay. But no, another great win, pretty gritty, and we're moving on to Purdue.
Yeah, so you brought up the Johns, and I have a note that applies to both of them. And my big note applying to both of them is I love it when the two of them are aggressive. They are both very, very good at driving to the basket. Mm-hmm. So seeing both of them being aggressive is really awesome. It opens things up for not only them, but for the rest of the team as well. So looking at John Blackwell first, he was hitting his threes. I've said this a whole bunch of times this season and last season. If he's making his threes, he's going to be a problem. And he was 3 for 7, which isn't, you know, an amazing percentage, but that's just under 50%. Shot well from the field overall, made 2 of his 3 free throws. He had 19 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. And my main pat on the back for John Blackwell is the super tough mid-range shot that he made with just under 1.5 minutes left in the game. Super, super tough contested shot. Just a really big clutch bucket for him to knock down as a sophomore. Then moving to John Tanjay, he was hitting his threes, especially in the first half as well. He finished 3 for 9 from the three-point line, which is 33%. That's I'd say about average for college basketball. But Mike brought up the free throws, his clutch free throws. Clutch free throws and a huge corner three. He at one point scored 8 points straight for the Badgers in the second half and blocked a layup by an Iowa player after they had a couple of offensive rebounds on a possession late in the game as well. Yeah. There was a scramble possession where the ball was just bouncing around and the ball was all over the place, and John Tanjay blocked a layup towards the end of the game. That was what I would say was his clutch play of the game. He finished with 22 points, 6 rebounds as well, and 4 assists. And both of them after the game were asked about the other, and they're both very complimentary of each other, which rightfully so. I talked about the last 2 weeks. I'm saying about John Blackwell, like, he's had a couple bad games. He's had a couple quiet games. Do not sleep on guys that you know that can ball. And here he is with 19, 6, and 2 assists and some really clutch play. And John Tanjay, he had a game where he was scoreless. He's been over 20 points, what, like 4 games in a row now?
Yeah.
So, and that just goes further to your point of these guys can help the Badgers win in multiple ways. Yeah. So you can have games where your guys aren't scoring, but the other guys are. Jake's going to talk about the bigs in a minute here. We've had games where both of those guys are in double figures. Both of those guys are in single digits. There's lots of things that the Badgers do. Mike, like you said, a couple too many turnovers in the first half, but they have where those turnovers don't affect them to the point that it affects them on both ends of the floor. When they've had their bad turnover times and their slow starts, they stay locked in on defense. That's what allows them to stay within striking distance until their offense catches back up and then go and win double-digit games, even in games where they trailed early. And then you brought up Iowa being a high-scoring team. Iowa made some tough shots in the beginning of the game. It is what it is. That's what happens when you play a good offensive team. I said it all the time. It doesn't matter what sport we're talking about. I've said it 100 times. Good offense beats good defense every time. So Mike brought up the defense at the end of the game on some of the player specific. If we look team specific, over the last 13 minutes and 16 seconds of the game, the Badgers held Iowa to 3 for 19 from the field. Over the final 7 minutes and 35 seconds, Iowa made 1 field goal. and no field goals in the final 4 minutes and 28 seconds for Iowa. That's a stranglehold. That's not defense. That is constriction. Iowa scored 63 points. That's their lowest total this season, and it's their second lowest total in the last 2 years. So the Badgers' defense really is what won them the game, in my opinion. You know, we're talking about the players individually and breaking it down that way, but the team defense was fantastic, and everybody plays a part in it.
For sure.
So, Jake, how'd you feel about the bigs?
So, let's get into it. Nolan Winter, 4 points, 7 rebounds. He was 2 for 8 from the field, 0 for 3 from three. I'm just gonna run through this, and then I'm gonna tie it all together all nicely. Stephen Crowell, 7 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. Complete game. Stuffed the stat sheet. He played really good defense down low. Now, no Owen Freeman, as mentioned by Mike. Very nice for us. Not excited that he's happy. Not happy that he's injured. I'm not happy about that. He's a very good player. I would love him to wear red and white next year. Transfer portal's crazy, man. All I'm saying is we see some crazy things. I would love Owen Freeman to come over and take Stephen Crowell's scholarship and play next to Nolan Winter next year. Gilmore, 5 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 for 5 from the field, 1 for 3 from three. Big time three, by the way. Xavier Amos, 2 points, 2 rebounds, 1 assist. The loudest 2 points of the entire afternoon for the Wisconsin Badgers. That putback slam was chef's kiss, dude.
Oh. And a clutch time, too.
Yeah.
That was
right before half, right? Yeah.
Perfect timing.
I got to say, the transformation of Xavier Amos from the beginning of the year to now, he is really learning to become a Big Ten big man. He's been mixing it up down low for the last few weeks, and I really love the toughness that he's showing. He's going to be a primetime player next year for us. He's developing very nicely. So if you combine the big man numbers, 18 points, 21 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, a block. The 3 steals and block all belong to Crowell, but good team defense, as Tyler was talking about. I had those numbers written down as well. I was going to talk about them. Did a great job covering them. So 6 of 23 total. That's 26% from the field, 2 for 10 from 3. So the thing I want to say, you look at the Badgers game before this, you're talking Indiana. That game was 76-64. You talk about this game against Iowa. This game was 74-63. This is going to be the norm for the rest of the year, I think. I think guard, who – we might have to have a conversation next week if the Badgers go into Purdue and get a big-time win. We might have to have a Coach of the Year conversation. We might want to start jumpstart.
I think there's definitely going to be a form to fill out if the Badgers go to Purdue and win.
This team was preseason picked to finish 12th in the Big Ten this year. If he goes into Purdue and jumps up to second or third in this conference at this point in the year,
they're going to be 12th in the country.
Dude.
Oh, for sure.
That's all I'm saying. He's got these guys focusing on defense. And the thing about it is, you can go back into early in the season when he was talking about, you know, oh, it's nice to be able to shoot all these threes. And it's awesome that the Badgers make double-digit threes every game. That's something that we weren't accustomed to all the time, right? Also want to give a shout-out. The Badgers made 12 of 14 from the free throw line in the second half. And a close game, that's clutch. Be able to make 12 of 14, I feel very good about them at the free throw line this year. We've been kind of harping on that all year. I just want to continue to do that. It is nice that they shoot.
Nerves at the end of halves when that's the situation.
Oh, I love it.
Like, especially at the end of the game when you're floating in that, like, 3 to 6 point lead range.
Yeah.
I have no nerves.
I was a little nervous coming into this year, and I wasn't able to be on the season primer, sadly. I was a little nervous about losing a little bit of the clutch gene that Chucky was leaving behind. Obviously, I didn't know anything about John Tanjay, his clutch gene, and how he was going to fit into the Big Ten. And I didn't know how John Blackwell was going to elevate his game to fit the new role that he was going to have to fill. I got to say, both are passing with flying colors.
Yeah.
I think that there should be absolutely zero complaints about both those guys.
Yeah.
So you take John Tanjay, how good he's been. You take John Blackwell, how he's been. Winter, how he is, you know, advancing his game. Mm-hmm. Gilmore has been a very pleasant surprise. This Wisconsin Badger team, probably since the year they went to the title, This is probably the most confident I'll go into March with this team.
That's fair. And with opportunity to still inspire more.
Yeah, there's a lot of room.
There's plenty of room. Yeah.
We're getting in the gauntlet right now.
I mean, Taylor, did you watch the Michigan-Purdue game last night?
Watched the second half.
You watched the second half? I watched a little bit of the first half, and I watched the second half. If the Wisconsin Badgers can take a little bit of the Michigan offense, now I understand they don't have a guy that can handle the ball who's 7 feet tall and can do all those other things like Wolf can.
Yeah.
But Nolan Winter could be a poor man's Wolf. I've really firmly believe that way. He's not the passer.
And the ball handling, kind of like what you said.
I'm not sure on ball.
He crossed a dude over this year.
He's got a little handle. I think he's got a
consistently. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotta see more of that then.
I hear you. I think I just want a little bit more of the big to big kind of play. Sure. That's all I'm asking for. I like Tanjay and Blackwell to be able to do their thing. I like how we fit Kamara McGee in there. We fit, you know, all these other guys in there. I would just like a little bit more big to big play because I think that's where basketball's kind of going. If you look at the NBA, all the teams that are dominant have a big man that could.
So that would definitely be like a Greg Gard thing more than a Winter and Crowell thing, in my opinion, just because of the way that the Badgers offense operates, which is so much like perimeter passing and then having Blackwell and Tanjay driving baseline.
Yeah.
So if you can set up Crowell or Winter, you know, straight on from the basket with the other one posting up, and you can maybe get some high low action mixed into the swing offense part of it.
Yeah. And the thing is, both of them can shoot the three. So you have to respect that. So you can do it either way. You could, interchangeable, which is why I want
closer to the 3-point line.
Yeah. But that's the only gripe I have. That's the biggest room for improvement on the offensive side that I can see.
Yeah. Justin, welcome back. The Badgers have two games in the next week. They play Saturday at Purdue. That's the game we're talking about. And then they play next Tuesday against Illinois. So we will have two Badger games next week. Thankfully, that Illinois game is at home, so the Badgers will get a chance to have some home cooking after what's going to be a very, very, very tough road game on Saturday at number 7 Purdue. So those will be the two games that we'll have next week. Other than that, Mike, you got anything else you want to say before we switch to the Bucks?
It's going to be a hell of a game. It has been done before at Mackey Arena. Johnny Davis has done it himself before. We got some senior-led dudes that I think can go on the road and get a big-time win. They know what's at stake here. And looking forward to it, and even the Illinois game as well. Illinois is kind of struggling a little bit, but they are also not completely healthy. So I'm hoping bare minimum we can get out of this 1-1. I would take that all day. But yeah, a lot of opportunities coming up, even these next two games. Then you get Oregon at home, who's also kind of not sputtering. I don't want to get that negative, but it's definitely a doable game. After Purdue, we got the next two at the Kohl Center. So looking forward to our stretch coming up here.
All righty, Mike. Well, then we will see you next week. Take care, and obviously go Badgers.
Sounds good. Later, fellas.
All right. So you and I, now we have four Bucks games to talk about. And when we get into some of these Bucks discussions, we're going to have, mainly for the Hawks game, we're going to have some film study that we're going to do here. But let's start with last Wednesday's game, Bucks and Hornets. Now, this game, just before we get into starting with it, Giannis was a late scratch in this game. He was working, trying to get his calf loosened up. It went from calf tightness to a calf strain. And, not surprisingly, people online are calling him Anthony Davis and shit. Like, he's going to be out until the week after the All-Star break. He's going to miss. It's going to total, like, what, five games? Six games?
Yeah, five.
Yeah. It is what it is. DeAndre Ayton has the same injury. He's going to be sidelined for a month.
I'm just going to say this. Not that I ever want Giannis to get hurt, but if there was ever a perfect time for him to get hurt, it would be right before the All-Star break where they give you 8 day extra days off.
Yep. Yeah.
That's fine. Let him rest. Obviously, going into tonight's game, I saw that Dame was kind of doubtful or probable or whatever they deemed him to be. Making another young guy game. I have literally no feelings towards this game tonight. We'll get into that later, but just let everybody rest. Give them the extra rest. The real season starts after this weekend, right? Me and you have talked about that before.
Yep. All right, so let's start with the Bucks and Hornets game. Last Wednesday, the Bucks were 18 of 42 from the three-point line. Love that. 42.9%. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Torian Prince was 3 for 4. Brooke Lopez was 4 for 7. Gary Trent Jr. was 3 for 5. Everybody looked well-rested, in my opinion. This was the first game after the rest game when they sat everybody against the Thunder. Yep. Dame, Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis back from his personal issues. They had 18, 14, and 13 points, respectively, at halftime. Bobby Portis was 0 for 3 from the three-point line, but he was 6 for 10 from the field in the first half. Dame had 18 points and 10 assists at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
He finished with 29 and 12 in three quarters. Dame didn't play the fourth quarter. And then Bobby Portis finished with 23 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 blocks. Gave the Bucks a big boost in rebounding. He actually talked about that after their last game, that he saw that the Bucks were struggling with rebounding while he was out, and that was the main thing that he was looking to provide when he got back from his personal issues. Other than that, Tyler Smith, he needs more muscle, and then I could see the Chris Bosh comparison that you brought up that Giannis mentioned when the Bucks picked him up.
Yeah, he definitely
a little
has
bit more muscle. I will say Tyler Smith is much faster than Chris Bosh ever was.
That's fair. I mean, that's fair. Chris Bosh was a little bit bigger though, but yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the thing, is if like if Tyler Smith adds a little bit of muscle, if he maintains his speed with a stronger frame, he'll be a problem.
Oh yeah. I'm very
excited for that. Very, very excited for the development of Tyler Smith over the next year or 2 years.
I agree.
Last thing, this game ended as a 10-point win for the Bucks, but the Bucks had it put away much earlier. Like I said, Dame didn't play the fourth quarter, so this is one of those games where the final score looks much closer than the game actually was.
Yep.
So what takeaways did you have from last Wednesday?
Well, talking about Bobby Portis coming back, he absolutely dominated. I love the physicality he played with. He played with a very good pace. He played faster, which is something that we have talked about on this show on the offensive end, where, you know, he kind of sputters the offense a little bit. He played really, really fast and good pace. Didn't bog down the offense. So I love that. That's the first thing I talked about. Damian Lillard was in takeover mode. Now, this is something that he talked about, I believe it was before last night's game. Talked about how Doc was talking to him about, when Giannis goes out, you have to lead us in scoring and you have to lead us in assists. And to find that out, you know, a couple of minutes before tip-off, I mean, for him to be the professional of all professionals, to be able to put that hat on, to be able to take the number two hat off and put the number one hat on and just lead this team is absolutely a luxury for this team.
Yeah.
It's a reason that you make a trade for a Damian Lillard, a guy who's led a franchise into the playoffs, carried them to the second round, to the Western Conference Finals.
100%.
I mean, to have that, honestly, we're pretty blessed. People are going to complain about this and complain about everything because people just like complaining for some reason. I don't understand it. But to have a guy like Damian Lillard step up in that situation, love it, man.
And shout out to Doc for just giving him that perspective shift before the game.
Yeah.
He said Doc always talks to him right before the game starts. Shout out to Doc for just planting that seed for Damian Lillard to be – you know, the aggressive player.
Yep, fire Doc.
Yeah, get him out of here. Doesn't play the young guys.
Yeah.
It wasn't even an argument. It was just me being like, oh, my God, how are people this dumb?
Yeah, did everybody really enjoy that OKC game? Because if you want to play all the young guys, expect
to win. Oh, my God, it wasn't even that. It was that the guy was complaining that Sims wasn't playing.
Yeah, I saw that. That's
and then saying that Doc never plays young guys, and I'm like, there's literally a young guy that's in the starting lineup, and he's like, but he didn't play when he was a rookie. Like, Sims isn't a rookie. Like, oh, my – dude, people's logic and the circles that they will go in to try to avoid being able to defend the thing that they're complaining about that doesn't make sense is, oh man, it's beyond baffling. It just, it makes my brain hurt that people can actually be that dumb.
It's almost like people would appreciate a rookie of the year more than an MVP, and that's just crazy to me. That's what it feels like when people are arguing about this stuff. But
you know what? There might be something to that, and we might be able to have a conversation like that next week. And I'm going to actually write something down about that, because there is something to be said about what the difference is when you're actually trying to contend versus being like, here's how good we could be in the future.
Yeah.
There's definitely something to be said on the mindset that those two realities offers people.
Yeah.
And how they approach both of them.
So getting into the efficiency here, off the drive, the Bucks scored 14 points. Gary Trent Jr. had 4 of them. He was 100% on drives. And Pat Connaughton was 2 of 3. He shot 66%, saying he scored 4 points as well. So that's 80 or 14. So efficient there from two players that you're not really expecting to help in that area, really, when you go into the game, right?
Sure.
Catch and shoot, the Bucks scored 38 points. If you take the averages of everybody off their efficiency and shots that they took, they averaged 54% on catch and shoots. That's efficient. Pull-up game, 32 points off the pull-up game. Damian Lillard absolutely dominated in this area versus the Hornets. He had 19 points on 61.5% shooting. The team average was at 43%. There was a few people that missed a couple shots, but Damian Lillard was on one. He was prime Dame in this game for a
little bit. And some of those stats, they will be a little bit skewed by some of those younger guys coming in towards the end of the game, because that's the same way that like leads go from 20 to 10, even though the Bucks have all their reserves in. Just those guys, they're just not as good as basketball players. Like there's nothing wrong with that, but you're trying to build them for the future. We talked about the Thunder game last week. Like you're just trying to build good habits in your young players.
100%. That's why I wanted to point out Damian Lillard and how he did, and then the team average. So shows how good Dame is on a pull-up game. He is absolutely filthy.
Damian Lillard is better than Ryan Rollins.
I don't understand how people – why they don't appreciate Dame. Like, the bag that Dame has is endless.
I think a little bit stems from the fact that there is some inconsistency in his game. There absolutely is.
There is with everybody.
His unfortunately is occasionally a little bit more volatile.
That's fair.
Because Dame will have 38 and 43 in back-to-back games. and then, you know, he'll have a 5-for-16 game in there once in a while.
Yeah.
Like we just had this conversation a week ago that he didn't shoot well against, what was it, the Spurs? He had like a 5-for-17 game and he had 13 points. And it was his first, or he had 15 points, and it was his first non-20-plus point performance in the last 13 games.
Oh, you're thinking of the game against the Grizzlies, I think.
Grizzlies, that's what it was.
He was 4-15, he had 15. Against the Spurs, he shot 6-of-17, had 22 points.
Yeah. So it's the one game that breaks a streak of really good games that people like to then freak out and be like, oh my God, Dame's washed. Even though, like, if you look at the last 10 games, it's like, okay, he's had 7 really good games, 2 okay games, and 1 bad game. If you're going to have those freakouts, you have to expand the sample size and then re-ask the question if what you're thinking is actually true.
For sure.
Okay.
Just finishing up the efficiency and the paint, the Bucks scored 10, and Bobby had 8 of them, and he shot 80% on paint touches, so he did tremendous there. Points in the paint was something that I was kind of watching a little closer without Giannis. We're going to go over some stuff here shortly, but Charlotte scored 42 and the Bucks scored 30. You can have a 12-point deficit when you make 18 threes. So it's kind of how that works. Other than that, I thought the Bucks starters really carried the load. 79 points, 27 rebounds, 18 assists for them, 28 of 54 from the field and 12 of 26 from three for the starters. So the starters carried the load, but that's what happens, you know, when the bench doesn't look as good is because you have some injuries and some other players move up in the rotation, and that kind of hurts some things. But full strength, you know, with Giannis, and we get Kuzma on track here. I got some numbers for Kuzma AJ Green and Bobby Portis at the end here that we'll talk about. But yeah, good win for the Bucks. They always win versus the Hornets. So whenever the Bucks need a win, just if you look at Charlotte, they're gonna win that one.
Yeah, outside of the one they lost, but it is what it is.
They win 15 out of 16.
It is something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the Hornets game. Now, I don't have a ton of takeaways, but we are going to do a little bit of conversation about some of the things that happened in this game after we talk about it a little bit. So the first thing is basketball is a game of runs, right? We've said this tons of times. People more famous and versed in basketball will say it. The Hawks ended the first quarter on a 22-7 run. The Bucks went on a 14-2 run to tie the game at 43. They went on a 16-4 run after the game was tied at 43. They went on a 44-13 run at one point in the second quarter. That right there has to at least tell you that it's possible to happen in a basketball game. Now, these guys are all professional basketball players. It is possible for other teams to do these things. You can't just look at the Bucks and be like, okay, the Bucks went on a huge run. Now the other team should stop trying, or now the other team should be suddenly worse at basketball and not capable of doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like yes, there's a talent gap between certain players. Now the gap is closer between, say, like Trae Young and Dame than it is between Onyeka Okongwu and Giannis. But Giannis is not playing in this game, obviously. Mm-hmm. But seeing a video of a guy, like a completely irrelevant player to today's NBA, John Lucas, going into playing in games with former pros and college players and absolutely cooking every single player in the gym, and you hear John Lucas make a statement like, I am closer to LeBron than you are to me. That shit's true. Like, yeah, all the guys in the NBA, the 15th guy on the bench would cook every single person you know. Like, that, the talent gap isn't as great as to say that the Bucks going on a 44-13 run in the second quarter means that the Hawks are just going to suck at basketball for the second half.
Yeah.
So the Bucks made a three to start the third quarter, and the Hawks went on a 7-0 run after that. The lead went from 23-13 in about 5 minutes. The lead was under 10 in about 7 minutes. The lead was cut to 3 in about 8 minutes. And in about 9 minutes and 15 seconds, the Hawks went from down 23 to tied. Now, that is how basketball goes. It's a game of runs, like we've discussed, and they just chipped away. They chipped away. They on a 22-4 run to end the third quarter. The Bucks were able to cut the lead to 1, and then the Hawks went on another 6-0 run. Now, this game did also offer us the debut of Kyle Kuzma. He made his first two shots as a Buck, had 12 points in the first half. And as we're going to talk about in a second here, he looks like he understands how to use his gravity. That's a big thing that we've talked about with Dame and Giannis, is understanding the gravity that they have. And Kyle Kuzma has some of that gravity as well. So, Jake, I'm going to let you give your thoughts on the Bucks and the Hawks, and then we'll do a little bit of film study here.
Yeah, so I have so many things I want to say. God, I just saw so many dumb comments from people, but I'm going to save them till we get to last night's game because I have some stuff I want to address. So in this one, obviously, you talked about the second quarter. Second quarter was fun. That was a lot of fun. We shot the ball well. Damian Lillard had a good game again, 23 points, 9 rebounds, 10 assists. That's a good game from Dame. 4 of 13 from threes, not the best. It's not the worst. But he's always close. The starters in this one, 74 points, 31 rebounds, 21 assists. Bobby started this one at 26 and 15. So, again, back-to-back good games from Bobby Portis. He did not play elite defense. Now, this was the Kyle Kuzma debut. As you said, 12 points, 7 rebounds, and an assist. 4 of 13 from the field and 3 of 8 from 3. Gary Trent Jr., 19 points, 0 rebounds, 4 assists. What's up, Steve? Oh, Steve, don't worry. I'm going to go off. I'm going to try to keep the cussing on a minimum here because I'm just so sick and tired of people. Gary Trent Jr. was very good in this one. 7 of 12, 5 of 8 from 3. The bench scored 36 points, had 12 rebounds and 7 assists, shot 13 of 34 from the field and 9 of 19 from 3. Between Kuzma and Gary Trent Jr., they had 31 of the 36, 7 of the 12 rebounds, 5 of the 7 assists. They made 11 of the 13 shots off the bench. They took 25 of the 34 shots. They made 8 of the 9 threes and shot 16 of the 19 threes from the bench. So the bench was Kyle Kuzma and Gary Trent Jr. against the Hawks. When I was writing these numbers out, I was like, this is mind-boggling. Although Gary Trent Jr. has been very good for the last couple of weeks, I will say.
Yeah.
Now, somebody who has not been good is AJ Green. I'm not going to beat up on him. He has not been playing good defense. Everybody likes to harp on Brooke Lopez now. Since Chris Middleton's gone, Brooke Lopez has become public enemy number one.
Yep.
And then public enemy number two has always been Bobby Portis, no matter who public enemy number one is. Yeah. So everybody wants to talk about Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis not playing defense. I got a newsflash for you. AJ Green has been playing some shit defense, and he's not shooting the ball right now. He should be held to the same standard as Bobby Portis.
The bench exact player, same standard.
Useless if they're not scoring. Just going to be completely honest about it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like we've always known that Bobby Portis is not a good defender.
Yes.
But his offense and his rebounding are supposed to be the give and take. AJ Green is a great shooter who is capable of playing good defense. Now, right now, he's not shooting well or defending well. This is gonna make people pissed off. But right now, Pat Connaughton might be deserving of minutes more than AJ Green at this current moment. I'm not saying overall. I'm not saying that Pat's a better long-term prospect or anything like that. But over the next couple games, Pat should maybe get a couple of AJ's minutes. I'm not saying anything further than that. So. We're going to talk about starting with Kyle Kuzma. I don't know if you had anything else that you wanted to say before we add some stuff.
Let's go into the film study here. I just wanted to get that point off my chest before I give some perspective later.
Okay. So we're going to start with Kyle Kuzma. Now we have two very, very similar plays of, like I just said, Kyle Kuzma understanding his gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the first one. He's already pointing this out. He's pointing for Gary Trent Jr. to go into the corner. That's exactly where he goes. Brooke Lopez is going to come set him a screen. And the only thing that Kyle Kuzma is reading at this point is this guy right here.
Yep.
And keep this in the front of the mind. This is the guy that Kyle Kuzma is reading. He does not care about what Larry Nance Jr. is doing. Because he is only thinking of either driving here, if this guy goes towards Gary Trent Jr., or you'll see what he actually does, which is when this guy steps down, he passes out to the Gary Trent Jr., who gets a wide open three. He doesn't make this one, but spoiler alert, he makes the next one. So it's the same thing. Kyle Kuzma coming off screens, and he is reading this defender. If that defender stays in the corner with Gary Trent Jr., Brooke is already pointing in the air. He's ready for a lob, and that's going to be an assist. Unless this defender stays with Brooke, then he goes right down the lane for a layup.
Yep.
And this is good basketball IQ by Kyle Kuzma, and he reads the corner defender who comes down. Gary Trent Jr. wide open for three, cashes it.
Yes.
So I don't know if you had anything you wanted to say on those two plays, but
The last one. It helps that you have Dame in the opposite corner here. So now you can't even get help from this right side defender.
Yeah, Tyson Daniels isn't coming down.
So that automatically just eliminates everything off the right side. Yeah. So like you said, he only has one read. And that's okay, because some quarterbacks in the NFL, you give them one read too. Yeah. So Kyle Kuzma, you give him one read, he did a perfect job at executing it. Now this guy, I believe that's Trae Young right there, he's in no man's land. He's screwed either way, honestly.
Yeah,
he's screwed either way.
Yeah, because I mean, you're leaving Gary Trent Jr. or Kyle Kuzma, Gary Trent Jr. or Torian Prince open for three.
Yeah, and those
that's,
are two.
That's
over.
A tough spot to be in, but that's good constructed offense.
Yeah, 100%.
Again, like the fire doc people aren't going to want to hear it, but this is just a well constructed play.
Yes, it is.
So, and that's a good point out of Dame being in the corner here, because then Dyson Daniels can't help down. Like I was just talking about the defender at the free throw line. If that guy stays with Kuzma, he throws a lob to Brook. Unless the corner guy comes down, then he hits Gary Trent Jr. If Trae Young flows to the corner as the corner defender comes down, all he's got to do is throw a pass over his head, and Taurean Prince is open for three. If Dyson Daniels helps down as this defender stays with Brook, he passes the corner for Dame for three. Somebody's getting an open three or a dunk on this play.
Yeah, the spacing on this play is elite, so good job by the Bucks executing it as well.
Yeah, yeah, this is – yeah, that's very well done. All right, defensively, Kyle Kuzma. He's played three games now with the Bucks. This was his second. Sorry, this was his first.
That's what his first.
In the first two games, he drew two charges defensively. So props to Kuzma for putting his body on the line for his new team. That's good job by him. He's ready to play for a contender.
Yep.
Now, this last play, this is – I'm going to give more credit to Doc Rivers. Because this is just very, very, very well designed.
Yes.
So this is another play where you're kind of screwed no matter how you play it. And the situation here is Kyle Kuzma inbounds the ball, and Damian Lillard sets him a screen, and Kuzma goes down. Now, this puts Dyson Daniels in a really shitty spot because Damian Lillard sets a pretty good screen.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if two guys go with Kyle Kuzma, Damian Lillard's getting a wide open three right here. If Dyson Daniels stays attached to Damian Lillard like he does, Kyle Kuzma gets a free run at the rim, and he's going to posterize somebody on this year. Trae Young gets to him a little early because he's quick and small, and he follows Kuzma. But this is great inbound set for the Bucks to run. And I'm not saying anything offensive about Chris Middleton because we love him, but the Bucks are not running this play with Chris Middleton.
No.
This is absolutely something that the athleticism of Kyle Kuzma brings to the Bucks that they did not have.
Yep.
So anything you wanted to say on this one?
Yeah, I pointed out earlier, I thought that was a good screen. Also, recognizing that during this time period, that they had Trae Young guarding primarily against Prince, having him as the corner defender is, you know, that's brilliant to have him help over. But first thing I got to point out, and I said this to you before, why the hell is that guy that close to Andre Jackson Jr.? What is he doing right there? He's got to know.
Face guarding him, just...
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
What is happening? Here's the thing. I would understand if Andre Jackson Jr. was going to go down and screen for Taurean Prince, they were going to have some backside action. Sure. But he didn't even move. Neither of them moved on this play. He just watches the whole thing.
Taurean Prince is just watching to see if he's going to get a pass. Which, on another defender, if Taurean Prince is being defended by a bigger guy, maybe he does. Maybe yeah. Kuzma does take one dribble and pass to the corner.
Yeah, maybe.
But even still, there's no reason for that dude to be that close to Ajax.
Yeah, he needs to be about 4 feet down. I was like, what is he doing right here?
Yeah. If anything, you leave Andre Jackson Jr. open and you rotate down to Taurean Prince.
That's what he should do, because the easier pass is the Prince right here. But, you know, I don't know anything about basketball.
Okay. All right. Next thing we have here, this is just you just love to see this, and it's just great ball movement. This is something where when the Bucks lead in the second half was beginning to dwindle, it's because they got away from stuff like this. And the ball movement by the Bucks in the first half was great. In the second half, it got very isolation heavy. What I should have done is pulled the assist numbers from the first half and the second half, but just good ball movement here in general. Everybody's bought in. Everybody's moving. Oh, this mamas the Mia so much. And I don't care who you run it for, who you run it with. Andre Jackson Jr. and Damian Lillard are both moving, even while the ball is moving. Like, oh, this is beautiful basketball right here. Even Doc loves it in the background. Doc's clapping. He loves it. This is beautiful basketball.
This is the impact that Andre Jackson Jr. has to have on offense.
Yes. Love that.
The activity and energy is his whole thing. Good follow by Dame, though.
Yeah. Yeah, good crash. But, yeah, I agree with you on Ajax. If he's just constantly moving, all that's going to do is tire somebody out from the other team.
And look at all the rotations he forced just by doing – he moved 6 feet on that. When they get into the half court, he moved like 6 feet. He's at the elbow, goes back to the three-point line, back to the elbow, down low, swing it. Look at all the rotations he forced with that.
Dude, and here's the thing about this is that this is a coaching thing. This is a coaching thing because of what Ajax does when he catches this ball in the paint. Because right now, Kyle Kuzma is out on the break. When he catches this, Kyle Kuzma's not in the corner. He's trusting that Kyle Kuzma's going to be in the corner. Doc loves it. This is such good basketball.
It was. That was beautiful.
Okay. Now, we have Bobby Portis, and this isn't us trying to demean Bobby Portis or, you know, say that he's trash or whatever, you know, whatever people are saying online. What we are trying to do here is present opportunities where Bobby Portis can improve. So if we were Bobby Portis's coaches, which we're obviously not because we're just dudes of the podcast, but there's opportunity here for Bobby Portis. And firstly, I understand that Bobby Portis cooled off in the second half, but Bobby Portis, you are here to shoot this shot.
Yeah.
I understand that you missed a couple, but nobody on your team is going to fault you for taking a three that is this wide open.
Yeah.
So first things first, Bobby, shoot that shot. Because if you pass the ball to AJ Green, which Jake pointed out when we were talking about this earlier, that yes, there's an opportunity for AJ Green to kick this ball to Rollins or Trent with the amount of time that's on the shot clock. But when you see the shot clock and single digits, it's probably not the first thought you're thinking.
Yeah, that's
it's fair. Probably like, we got to get a shot off or we're going to get a shot clock violation.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads to AJ Green getting a mid-range shot blocked. But even if this shot doesn't get blocked, I would still rather have Bobby Portis shooting a wide open three than AJ Green shooting this shot.
I agree.
It's not to say that I don't think that AJ Green can make a shot in the paint, but you're talking about a contested fadeaway from 10 feet from the basket versus Bobby Portis shooting wide open from straight on three.
Yeah.
So any thoughts you have on this specific play?
I don't want to sound mean, but Bobby Portis's poor decision-making on this play really ended badly for the Bucks and AJ Green. Now, first of all, 100% agree. You pull that. Yep. You have a guy who's shorter than you jumping at you. You just shoot that thing, okay?
Every single time.
If nothing less, you have AJ Green down here who's going to be able to crash. If
and AJ Green can get in front. Even if you don't want to shoot the three, just pretend like you're going to shoot the three. So that this defender keeps running towards you to try to contest it, because you can just like pretend shoot it to AJ Green.
You could do that.
Like, I'm not in the NBA, obviously, but I do stuff like that often because people know that I want to shoot threes.
Yeah.
So if I catch the ball on the three-point line and I jump like I'm about to shoot and I just throw like a really soft, quote-unquote, shot, and people are like, whoa, that's short. It's like, nope, that's a pass. And guys get layups.
If nothing less, I would. If you're not going to shoot that, I would swing this back to Gary Trent, who has a big man on him, so you have a little bit of a mismatch.
That's fair. That's fair.
That's the only other gripe I have with this. Shoot that or pass it back to Gary Trent.
Yeah, or go up to shoot and pass it to AJ Green, who's standing by himself on the block right now. Before that,
right now is the time
to rotate down. Because once you dribble drive, now that defender does rotate down. And I understand it would be a really tough ask of Bobby Portis to see this where he is right now. But if he can see as he's dribbling that corner defender start to come down, and this is something that Giannis does and he does not get enough credit for, Giannis will throw this pass to the corner to Ryan Rollins.
I was thinking it, bro. I was thinking it. Like,
that's Giannis, where Giannis goes is underrated. Yeah. Okay. So, again, it's not to say that Bobby Portis is dumb, whatever, bad, however you want to say anything. It's just an opportunity where Bobby can learn from that play.
Yep.
Same with this one. And this is, again, something where there has to be some extra awareness. And we talked about this before the show as well, that these guys are all professional basketball players. We don't think that we are saying anything that is unreasonable when we're talking about these things. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a heightened level of awareness here for Bobby Portis to see that Trae Young is coming off of a screen. And we know, we've seen him in a playoff series, that Trae Young likes floaters. He makes floaters. He's good at them. It is what it is. But letting Trae Young walk into this shot, that's a warm-up. Bobby Portis, you might as well not even be there.
Yeah.
And we talked about this, that if Bobby Portis has his feet like here and here and is facing him kind of at, you know, more of a direct angle, kind of how Ryan Rollins is, that it forces Trae Young either towards Ryan Rollins or to the middle, where he's going to have to shoot like a fadeaway jump shot to get a shot over Bobby Portis or give Gary Trent Jr. enough time to recover.
Yep.
My first thought was that Bobby Portis needs to be like here and force Trae Young to not be able to shoot this shot, but have to try to drive around him, which if Bobby Portis can just get down enough time for Gary Trent Jr. to recover, or knowing, this is where the awareness part comes out, is knowing that Kyle Kuzma is right here. That was my biggest thing, is you have to contest this jump shot knowing that if Trae Young gets past you, that Kyle Kuzma is there to help you. Now, again, we talked through this as well, that if he does get there and Kyle Kuzma steps up, that Trae Young can try to make this pass around to the corner. Mm-hmm. And then it is on AJ Green to get around this screen and contest this. And at that point, if that three is then contested, and I believe this is Garrison Matthews in the corner, tries to make a dump-off pass right here, by the time those two passes happen, Kyle Kuzma should be here ready to recover. There's a lot going on here, but again, I don't think it's outside of the realm of the capability of these Bucks basketball players. And then on the backside, you just have Bobby and Gary Trent Jr. that have to recover to Larry Nance Jr. and to Trae Young.
Yeah, this is where communicating needs to be a little bit better before.
Absolutely.
Portis.
Yeah, it's not rocket science, but it's awareness, communication, and like we are doing right now, some film study.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say on this one?
No, you covered it all. Bobby just needs to rotate, get shoulder to shoulder with him, force him back middle. You're almost thinking of like an outside run kind of in football, where guys on the outside and you're one-on-one with them. You got to get an angle and force him back to the help, right? Because you have no help if you let him go baseline here. You're letting him destroy everything that can happen, possibly with help side defense, right? So if Bobby gets up closer, I like your idea of getting up closer. I like the idea of rotating him. then you kind of force him into a tough situation. But right now, where Bobby Portis is, he's in no man's land.
Right. And so, it's just either, and like we said, if you force him back to the middle or are closer as he's taking this shot, just to contest it a little bit, because this is just a warm-up jump shot for Trae Young.
Yeah.
And then the last thing on Bobby Portis, again, this isn't, we're not trying to dog Bobby Portis. But this is an awareness thing. This is a communication thing. It's an attention thing. It's just something that Bobby Portis, we just need him to be better at. And his offense, we talked about it already today, it does make up for some of his defensive shortcomings.
Mm-hmm.
But this specific play, this just can't happen. Torian Prince is communicating to him right now, and I know that we had a play earlier this season where we talked about this, where it was AJ Green yelling to Bobby to communicate that there was somebody behind him, because Bobby Portis, as Torian Prince is communicating that to him, he needs to just take one step back. Because right now, he's in the right spot, but as his guy is going back here to the back door, Bobby Portis needs to be right here.
Yep.
Because if he's at that spot, when this pass gets passed out of the screen, Bobby, oh man, this is tough. Bobby's looking for his guy like he's still standing here. But if Bobby is standing right here, that pass does not get through.
Yeah. That's the stuff. Oh, God. I love Bobby Portis. Brings a lot of energy. He's a great leader. One of the best leaders on this team. That's the stuff where when me and you are texting or talking during the game, sometimes we're on Xbox talking about it. It's like, dude, he gets lost like 6-7 times every game. And it's just like, dog. This is just like some simple awareness stuff. I mean, Tyler, me and you were learning this stuff freshman year. That was one of the first things that they were teaching us. C-man, C-ball, C-man, C-ball, C-man, C-ball. So we were always taught to be, you know, sink lower than our offensive player so that we could see man, see ball.
Yeah.
This is just a situation where, and this is crunch time. And if you look at the score of this game, this is crunch time in this game. This would have been a big time stop if the Bucks were able to get it, give them a chance to come back in this game, but just all for naught, really.
Yeah. And it's just another thing too, where if Bobby just flips his body around and he's facing the other direction, and he is able to keep his eye on his man and the ball, or at least be able to be close enough that he can look back and forth as opposed to being facing this way, still thinking his guy's over here.
Right.
And then when he sees the ball moving, looks back over here, and his guy is behind him.
Yeah.
It's an awareness thing. And again, I believe Bobby Portis is capable of this. He's a professional basketball player. This is what we are doing right now is attempting – what is actually constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sitting here saying that Bobby Portis sucks on defense and he's never going to be good at it. We are just trying to present this in a tactful way without just, like we said, saying that Bobby Portis sucks or that he should be benched or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
So just trying to have a little bit of a basketball discussion and do it in a way that isn't at the disrespectful level of quote unquote criticism, because people have lost the mark on what that word actually means and how it should be used.
Agreed. If I see this clipped and I see one comment on there about people talking about Sims needs to be playing, I'm gonna lose my shit. I promise you.
Let's as we go into the 76ers game, let's have that conversation, because trades happen. Guys are in other cities.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jericho Sims was playing for the New York Knicks up until Thursday afternoon or late Wednesday night.
Yep.
Still has to travel, meet the team wherever they're at. He has to get a physical. And then actually meet his teammates and his coaches.
Yep.
And practice with his team.
Yep.
So, say all that happens between Thursday and Friday. You really think he's coming off a plane and playing with a bunch of guys he's never played with, or half of them that he hasn't met?
And he wasn't playing that much in New York.
Do you? But even still, you think he's coming off and playing 5 minutes? You really like? Is that going to make fans that want to see him happy that he played 5 minutes in a game?
Probably.
Of guys that he's never played with. My thing is, their Sunday, Monday was a back to back. So Saturday was an off day. They had game Friday, off Saturday, game Sunday, game Monday. There's no practices in there. They didn't do a shoot around because they had a back to back. They had one walkthrough. So he's been there for 2 days. They've done one walkthrough, zero practices, zero shoot arounds. And you want him just thrown on the court without any concept of where he should be, what his teammates' tendencies are, how they like to play, how they communicate. Teams have different words for different plays. And you want him thrown out there. What advantageous position do you think that is? What possible benefit is there besides basically putting him in a pickup basketball situation with people that he does not know?
Yeah. I think people have to realize that this is not the YMCA. This is not the LA Fitness. This is not your random open gym on a Sunday or a Friday. This is the NBA.
And the other side of the coin is if, let's say they do it. Let's say they throw him out there, having never played, never practiced with any of his teammates. Mm-hmm. And then he plays bad because he doesn't have any concept of who he's playing with or what the calls are or what the strategy is or what the defense is. And then he plays poorly.
Yeah.
First thing people are going to say, fire John Horst. Jericho Sims sucks. He has no concept of where to be on defense. Well, no shit. He's been here for 3 days and hasn't had a practice with his teammates. But he had a 44-inch vertical.
Well, Jamarcus Russell could throw a football 70 yards from his knee. So how'd that work out? I'm not saying he's Jamarcus Russell, but I'm just saying that outside stuff doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
Like, yeah, if he was playing against a bunch of guys showing up to play a pickup basketball game, sure. But that's not what the NBA is.
Yeah.
Bucks have 30 more games to go yet. He's not going to show up day one having no practices in with his teammates and be inserted into a game with a big role expected.
Yeah.
Same with Kevin Porter Jr. He did not play on Sunday. He played on Monday, but let's talk about the Sunday game, Bucks and 76ers. Brought this up with the 76ers game. The Bucks, their three-point shooting was inconsistent like the Hawks game. They were 7 for 11 in the first half and then 4 for 17 in the second half. They finished 11 for 28. That's 39%. That's overall good, but good first half, not great second half. Sorry. That was just the first half. They shot so many threes this game that I thought 28 was their total. They started 7 for 11, then went 4 for the next 17, 11 for 28 in the first half. That's a lot of threes. That's why that tripped me up. They were 13 for 27 in the second half. They were 24 of 55 overall. That 24 was their new season high. 12 turnovers, not bad. You go to the Damian Lillard, another game where, like we talked about earlier with Doc, pointing out to Dame, like, hey, be more aggressive. Lead the team. 43 points, 8 of 15 from the three-point line. Love that.
Yeah.
14 to 27 overall, 7 for 7 from the free throw line. That 43 points was his season high. And he added 7 rebounds, 8 assists, and 2 steals.
Yeah.
Great game from Damian Lillard. And then Kyle Kuzma, you're going to talk about him in a second about getting his efficiency up, but he'll be a really nice piece. He finished with 13 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and a block. You know, you're going to talk about his efficiency in a second, but he took another charge in this game. That was his second charge in two games. Yep. And he had four in the entire first half of his season with the Wizards. And he's taken two in two games, now three with the Bucks. So, you know, I don't believe that Kyle Kuzma's ceiling is as high as Chris Middleton's was when he was playing for the Bucks during the championship run. But Kyle Kuzma is bringing good things to the team, and it's things that the Bucks needed, like youth and off-ball movement, and still giving the Bucks some of that basketball IQ that we appreciated from Chris Middleton. I don't think Kyle Kuzma's as smart of a basketball player as Chris Middleton either. But when you add in his activity and his athleticism and his youth, he's going to do good things for the Bucks.
Well, and he's played meaningful basketball before in his career. Now, people are really thinking about the Wizards, Kyle Kuzma, but when he was on the Lakers, he was one of their key rotation players. He won a championship, so he knows how to win. He understands what it means to lock in every single possession, value the ball every possession. Another thing that he did, we're talking about defense, he had one steal and one block in this game. Now, it sucked because he got a chase down block, like a half-court chase down block, and it ended up in the hands of a 76er for a layup. But he still got the block. He also got the steal that he got, did a really nice job fronting Embiid, which having the versatility to switch. Now, this was something that another credit to Doc Rivers, because we're going to have to keep doing this because people literally don't understand basketball. Another credit to Doc Rivers as a switch that he made. Now, Embiid was cooking in the first quarter. Now, he's kind of one of those guys that, like, if he shoots a three, you kind of just let him shoot the three.
Yep.
Because he can go on a streak where he makes 5 of 6. Then he can go on a streak where he makes 0 of 6. That's just the way that he is.
Yep.
Now, he was shooting threes, and Brook Lopez was giving him space because he's not quick.
I want Embiid. I want Embiid in the three-point line.
Yeah. It's the
same thing with Giannis. Like, you would give him the most space when he's the farthest away.
Yeah, I mean,
his mid-ranges, I saw people complaining about Brook Lopez because that's where we're at. His mid-ranges, Brook Lopez was contesting them.
Yeah.
But you don't think that Joel Embiid shoots 5,000 contested mid-range shots a week in practice?
Maybe. I mean, he's sitting on the sidelines a lot, too. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, when he's actually practicing?
Yes, he does.
I guarantee you he's got a dude with a foam roller on a stick that's acting like a 7-footer's hand, putting a hand in his face.
Yeah.
It's less about the defender on that point and more about where he is on the court and understanding that. That's how shooters can make shots with their face not being able to see the basket.
Yes.
It's about knowing where they are on the floor beneath them versus where the basket is.
Yeah.
So Embiid is obviously an MVP. Maybe rightfully so, maybe not, but he's that level of player.
Yeah, he's definitely got the talent. Now, the switch that Doc Rivers made was switching Kyle Kuzma and Taurean Prince onto him and allowing Brook Lopez to kind of play that backline defense, which is usually the role that Giannis plays, to be completely honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So getting Giannis back will be nice. Will definitely solidify more of the defense. But in the first half, the 76ers were just making a lot of shots, honestly. Embiid was going crazy. Maxey had, 24, 26 at half as well. He was going crazy as well. I see Philadelphia, and I'm like, golly, I just don't like Philadelphia. But then I see the last name of Maxey, and I'm like, God, I really like Tyrese Maxey, dude. He's so fun.
I wanted him to be the replacement for Giannis for the All-Star
game. So did I. I was really – if it would have been – Maxey, I would have been like, all right, I could be happy with that. But Trae Young, I was just kind of like, ew. It is what it is. You said Damian Lillard had a crazy game. The efficiency from beyond the arc to go 8 of 15 without the threat of Giannis, that was prime Dame.
That's valid.
I want people to appreciate that. 14 to 17 would be insane. 8 of 15 from beyond the arc is insane. I don't care what you say. 43-7-8 is just nuts. The starter scored 81 points, had 29 rebounds, 16 assists. They shot 28 of 63 from the field and 13 of 33 from three. So very good there. On the bench, 54 points, 24 rebounds, 13 assists. The bench also made 11 three-pointers. Gary Trent Jr. and Dame are the first pair of Bucks teammates to both have 7 threes in the same game. So,
yeah, good call on that.
Awesome there. I do have to give credit to A.J. Green in this game. He hasn't been playing super well on defense and hasn't been scoring too much. He did have 11 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal in this one. But he was the highest plus-minus on the team at plus 28. So he was in there when the team was going on some big-time runs. So credit to him. I didn't want people to think that I don't like A.J. Green, because I do. He's a fun player to watch. But there is something to be said about, you know, playing young guys and then constructive criticism, having them improve, right? So
yeah.
The Bucks overall played very good in this game. They out-rebounded Philadelphia in the second half. They really put the clamps on. Offensive rebounding was really key in this one. They grabbed 19 offensive rebounds compared to Philadelphia, who had 8.
Nice. Love that.
Yes.
All right. So then, second of a back-to-back, you get Steph Curry and the Warriors with Jimmy Butler. Cool. The Bucks on the second of a back-to-back, 10 for 33 from the three-point line.
Yep.
Shocker. There's no legs there.
Yeah.
30.3%, trying to keep up with Steph Curry, who is still a very good basketball player.
Yeah, he's insane.
Bucks did have 20 turnovers, which is very high. 16 of them were steals by the Warriors.
Damn.
Gives Golden State a lot of extra opportunities to score, a lot of extra possessions. 31 points off turnovers for the Warriors. They had 93 field goals compared to 76 for the Bucks. That's 17 more shots that the Warriors got because of 20 turnovers. Now, what I'm going to say is this is something that Doc Rivers talked about after the Bucks acquired him, and something that John Horst talked about when he was interviewed about the trade deadline. Kyle Kuzma is all caps massively speeding up the Bucks offense.
Yeah.
He's grabbing rebounds and he is taking off.
Yep.
Kyle Kuzma's his athleticism and his youth is something that's really going to pick up the pace for the Bucks. And I am really excited to see how Kyle Kuzma and Giannis operate in transition together. That's going to be very exciting.
It's going to be fun.
He scored 21 points on only 9 shots. That's awesome. That's that efficiency that we were looking to see. He was also 9 of 13 from the three-point or from the free throw line. That's 69.2%. Nice. And then added 6 rebounds and did a really good job with the pace. He did a really good job as a foil to Jimmy Butler, who had 20 points. He was 12 of 14 or 12 of 15 at the free throw line. But Jimmy Butler added the 6 assists and 4 steals. I will say we got to see the Kevin Porter Jr. debut. He was working his ass off defensively when he had a possession on Steph.
He was.
He made his first shot as a Buck. And after that, I understand he's with a new team. He got a little antsy, little happy feet, had a couple turnovers. I'm not going to freak out and be like, oh, my God, Kyle or Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be terrible and he's going to turn the ball over all the time. It's one game, just got with his new team, probably, like I said, antsy, happy feet. I understand. I'm not going to worry about it. Overall, I will say the Warriors role players played better than the Bucks role players. The Warriors had 3 role players who had 13-plus points, and then they had Jimmy Butler with 20 and Steph with 38. The Bucks, you look at Dame, he matched Curry's 38. Both of them had 38. And I just brought up Kyle Kuzma matching Jimmy Butler. After that, Torian Prince's 19 points were the only player for the Bucks over 7 points.
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear complaining about Brook Lopez. He was 2 for 4 from the field. So he made 50% of his shots. Just need more from AJ, from Ryan Rollins, from Bobby Portis. Like, we just need more from those guys. Gary Trent Jr. This is just one of those games, and it's, I understand, the second of a back-to-back. So a lot of guys are without legs. I understand. So I'm not going to harp on it and be like, we need all new role players in the offseason. I'm not saying anything like that. It's just the schedule puts you in a position to be on a back-to-back. A lot of the guys didn't have their good legs because they just played a game the day before.
Yep.
All right, what do you got on the Bucks and 76ers? Sorry, Bucks and Warriors.
Yeah, so I'm going to address some comments. I saw multiple of these comments, which is why I wrote these ones down. There's 2 of them that I saw multiple of. You said you didn't want to hear anything about Lopez. Well, I was seeing a lot about Lopez. Somebody said, and they were trying to be, you know, sneaky about it, someone playing 20-plus minutes and only has 6 points. He took 4 shots. 4.
He 2 for 4. He made 50% of his shots.
He only shot it 4 times.
And he made half of them.
If he makes all of them, he's still not scoring 10 points because he didn't shoot a 3. Even if he shot 1 3 in there, he's still not scoring 10 points.
That was my biggest thing with Middleton before he was traded, is the 2 games that people did the most complaining, he was 0 for 2 and 0 for 4.
Yep. Oh, I agree.
It's not like he was 1 for 12 or something like that. Like,
yeah, yeah. Now, another one I kept seeing was Dame was the only one that showed up. Taurean Prince had 19 points, 8 rebounds, and 2 assists on 9 shot attempts.
Dog.
Kyle Kuzma had 21-6-0 on 9 shot attempts.
Yep, efficient.
Now, those are the only other players that showed up. I mean, Brook Lopez did his thing. Again, he only took 4 shots. But I just proved you wrong.
That's disrespectful as hell to Taurean Prince to say that.
It really is.
That's kind of what we're hoping for him is, you know, 15 to 20 points.
Yeah.
But saying nobody else showed up, disrespectful as hell to Taurean Prince, who's playing pretty well lately.
Yeah, and that's ridiculous. I got to say, Jimmy Butler got some superstar calls. Absolutely ridiculous. He had one on A.J. Green where A.J. Green played tremendous defense. Well, yeah, 2 on A.J. Green, actually. 1 late in the game and 1 in the first half. The 1 in the first half, I was bothered by that for like 10 minutes. I was like, I cannot believe they called that. Like, he put his hand up and everything as Butler was putting his hand up, and they still called the foul. And I was like, what are we doing?
The one that bothered me more was the one where A.J. Green was back on defense. He had his hands up in the air.
Yep.
Jimmy Butler runs into him shoulder first.
Yep.
A.J. Green slaps the ball out of his hands, and A.J. Green gets called for a blocking foul.
Yep. That's,
Jimmy Butler initiated the contact. How is
– I don't know. Yeah, it is what it is, I guess.
It should have been no call. I'm not saying it should have been an offensive foul. It should have been no call.
Yeah, I agree. So going into some shooting stuff here, the starters had 88 of the 111, 24 rebounds, 13 assists. They shot 28 of 47 from the field, so that's pretty good. 8 of 19 from 3. The bench, on the other hand, was really kind of the letdown. 23 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists. They were 10 of 29 from the field and 2 of 14 from 3. Now, you talked about the Warriors role players. The Warriors role players played okay, but really at the end of the game, I don't even remember the big guy's name, the guy Quentin who was on Post. A 2-week contract. What was his name?
Quentin Post.
Yeah, he hit those 2 back-to-back threes in the fourth quarter, and it was kind of like, okay, I guess that's all she wrote. That was kind of the dagger moment, to be completely honest with you. And then Steph Curry made a ridiculous 3 after that, which was like, good God.
That's what he does.
There are a few people in sports. If I'm playing against them and they do something, I don't get mad.
Yeah. Yep.
Steph Curry makes threes, guys.
Yep.
They literally showed a stat during the game of most games with 8-plus threes. Steph Curry has 87 games, dude. I don't think people understand how stupid that is. The second place is Lillard with 32.
32.
87 games of 8 threes. That's at least 8.
Yeah.
That's filthy, dude. That is so filthy. So I wanted to go over some with Green and Portis, right? And only reason I'm doing this is a little bit of perspective for some people. Now, AJ Green, this was his 7th game back from injury. I believe that's enough time for him to ramp it up now. Good thing that, you know, we play a game tonight with Damian Lillard. It has been ruled out. I got that update. So this is a good opportunity tonight for AJ Green to kind of get some shots off, get his rhythm going before the break. Right. But during his 7 games since returning from injury, he has scored 42 points, grabbed 15 rebounds, has 8 assists, 1 block, 5 steals. For context, that is an average of 6 points, 2 rebounds, 1 steal. He's shooting 15 of 42 from the field. That is 36% and 8 of 26 from 3. That is 31%. And he is averaging 23 minutes per game. So AJ Green has not been playing well. And it would be nice for him to start playing well. Now, lucky for him and for the Bucks, Torian Prince and Gary Trent Jr. have been playing well. So that's kind of the mantra of having a bunch of shooters. If you have a bunch of shooters, one guy goes on a slump, the other guys pick them up, right?
Yep.
They're never, if they all hit at one time, I mean, we're going to have a ridiculous game.
You're going to score 160 in a game.
Yeah, we're going to have a ridiculous week if they're all on fire at the same time. Now, Bobby Portis, this is his fourth game back since being gone for personal reasons. We did learn the reason behind the personal reasons. It was a death in the family. So if anybody has bad things to say about Bobby Portis, you can stick one up yours. Bobby Portis, since coming back from his personal reasons, has scored 74 points, 52 rebounds, 17 assists. He has 4 blocks. So for context on the averages, that's 18.5 points, 13 rebounds, 4.3 assists, and a block. He's shooting 45% from the field, 38% from three. So he's literally shooting a better percentage from three than AJ Green is from the field. And he is playing an average of 31.5 minutes. So everybody complains about Bobby Portis. He's bad on defense. He does this. He does this. Nobody has batted an eye at AJ Green. And that's something that kind of bothers me. A guy playing 23 minutes and a guy playing 31 minutes. Yes, Bobby has had to play a little bit more minutes because Giannis is out.
Right.
Normally he would probably play about 25 to 26 minutes. So their minutes would be literally the same. Mm-hmm. But Bobby Portis's production on offense has been worlds better than AJ Green over the last week.
Yeah.
So let's just take a chill pill. I'm not saying this so everybody starts dumping on AJ Green. I'm saying this so people take a chill pill, relax a little bit, and give them some grace.
Yeah.
So that's my piece on that. I looked up Kyle Kuzma's numbers since coming over. He's averaging 15, 7, and 2, shooting 43% from the field, 27% from three, and 71% from the free throw line. So if he ups that three-point number, I can't get too upset. If you hit 70% from the free throw line, I'm not going to complain. That's you're going the line doing it. Yeah. If you hit 80%, I'm really happy.
Kuzma being at 70.
If you hit 90%, I could probably look away from the TV screen when you go to the free throw line. I won't lie. I check my phone when Lillard goes to the line because you're probably getting 2 points. I did the same thing with Middleton.
That's fair.
When Middleton was going to the line, I was just like, okay, he's going to
be. Yeah, I'll say Middleton was like an 88% three-point shooter. Yeah. And the thing on Kuzma's numbers is like, yes, he's not shooting 50, 40, 90 right now, but he's been here for three games. Like, all of his numbers could change with one good basketball game.
Yeah,
if he plays well and shoots well tonight, like he could be like 48, 35, and 75 by tomorrow.
Yeah.
So the volatility in the small sample size is something worth noting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that's why I'm saying this.
Yeah.
I just need him around that mid-30s number. With the way that he's playing, if he's shooting mid to high 30s from the three-point line, absolutely a win in the
anything trade. Over 36%. The league average is 36%. If he's at 35 or better, he's giving us enough of a threat at the 3-point line.
No,
that's before you factor in any of his athleticism inside the 3-point line or the fact that he's got floater game.
Yep, 100%.
Okay. So the Bucks, like Jake said, they play tonight. They did rule out Damian Lillard. It's more of a rest thing than an injury thing in my mind. So other than that, we have the All-Star break. So we're only going to have one Bucks game to talk about next week. But we will have Damian Lillard in the three-point contest and Andre Jackson Jr. in the dunk contest. So those will be two things to watch as far as the Bucks are concerned over the weekend. But other than that, the Bucks will be back in action next Thursday. My hope is that's when we can possibly see Giannis back. That's when they're kind of targeting for him to be back. So the Bucks play tonight. Hopefully they can get a dub. Going to the All-Star break, feeling good. And then after that, hopefully everybody's rested, rejuvenated, and ready to go on a run. This stretch is kind of that lull where we've heard players talk about it in the past, like just getting to the All-Star break, like those last handful of games is where some of like the focus starts to go a little bit. You know, we're more than halfway into the season. The All-Star break isn't the halfway point. It's at like 60%. Yeah. So that 50 to 60% part of the season, I can understand the tension of knowing that you've been playing a lot of basketball in the last 3 months sets in a little bit. So this is their opportunity to get that reset. Probably have a little bit of a shorter show next week, but we'll bake in some other conversations to that to go with the two Badger games and the one Bucks game next week. So.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, you got anything else you want to throw out there?
Yeah, this is a comparison to baseball. It's kind of like what they say, the dog days of summer, right? When it starts to get real hot, you played 18 out of the last 19 days. I mean, you're exhausted. Your legs are shot. You've been around these guys every single second, and you're getting kind of sick of them. They're like roommates at this point. But at the same time, it's a brotherhood. So very excited for them to get a break. Very excited for All-Star Weekend. I feel like the fan base needs a break every once in a while. I feel like almost since we started this show, I always feel like the fan base needs a break, like when the Packers go on a bye week or something.
Right.
Or, you know, like the All-Star break in the NBA. I feel like the fans need a break more than the players do sometimes. A select few, probably. But other than that, it's going to be awesome to watch Andre Jackson jump out of the gym, and hopefully Dame puts on another show in the three-point contest.
Yeah. All righty. Well, we will be back then next Wednesday. Also, keep in mind, when we get into March, that's when we're going to be starting our Packers shows back up with some free agency stuff. And then towards the end of March, that's when we'll be starting our draft prep. Going to be a lot of work going into that, I promise. As far as our draft prep is concerned. So please get into that when we get into the later stages of March. Other than that, Jake, I will see you next Wednesday.
Sir, take care.